Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gregor Robertson. We're with you twice a week throughout the season for all the best reaction and analysis from some of the best football writers in the business.
Indeed. And joining us in the studio today, it is Alison Rudd from The Times. Coming up, we're going to look back on a famous night in Cardiff as Wales sealed their spot at Euro 2020. But with the Premier League returning this weekend, there is only one place to start. A wild week for Tottenham. What a 48 hours it has been for Spurs. Maurizio Pochettino sacked and Jose Mourinho installed on a 3.5-year deal on a reported £15 million a year. That's over twice what they were paying Pochettino and twice what top of the table Jurgen Klopp is on at Liverpool. And it is a London derby to kick off the Mourinho era at Spurs as they travel to West Ham, where Mourinho has won just one of his last four encounters. Now, at the time of recording, Mourinho was midway through his first press conference. So let's hear from him for the first time as the head coach of Tottenham.
These 11 months were months to think, to analyse, to rethink, to prepare, to anticipate things. And I think so. I think you never lose your DNA, you never lose your identity. You are what you are, for the good things, for the bad things. But I had time to think about many things. Don't ask me what are the mistakes, but I realized that during my career I also made mistakes, and I'm not going to make the same mistakes. I'm going to make new mistakes, not the same mistakes. So I had time. I think I'm stronger. And when I say I'm stronger, I'm not saying I'm fitter. I was always fit. But I think I'm stronger by the emotional point of view. I'm relaxed, I'm motivated, I'm ready, and I think the players they felt that in 2 days. I am humble enough to try to analyze, which was what I did, to try to analyze my career, not just the last year, but to analyze my career, the evolution, the problems, the solutions. I was humble enough for that. The principle of the analyze was not to blame anyone else.
So that is Mourinho, the head coach at Tottenham. Interesting to hear him refer to himself as humble. I guess we're going to have to now call him the humble one, Alison.
I think a few papers will be splashing that in the morning. He has to be something one, doesn't he? I'm not surprised he's gone down the path of humility, of accepting he's made mistakes. But only Jose Mourinho could accept he's made mistakes and then turn that into a positive and say he'll be making new mistakes, i.e. he's unafraid to go for it, unafraid to be himself, unafraid to make mistakes, because it's making that fearlessness is what makes you a great manager. So you can hear in my sigh, can't you? Where do you start with the man? I believe he would not be Spurs head coach if they didn't have the glitzy new stadium for a start. I think that makes it much easier for him. First of all, it sort of kills dead that idea that Tottenham are a joke club who don't win very much and a bit flaky psychologically. Because they've now got this glitzy new stadium. And if you've got a glitzy new stadium, you need a glitzy new manager. And I think he sees himself as starting a new era for the club. And because Pochettino's results were not good once the stadium opened, I think he feels he can sort of step in and do something different there. So I genuinely don't think he would have thought about going if he didn't have that backdrop, if you like. I think that's more important than people realise, is it's the image of it. And it's a good place to start there. And it's enough, I think, for him to be able to leapfrog over all the question marks, which are that he's never been that good about identifying or nurturing young talent, which is what Spurs has been all about for the past 5.5 years, that he falls out too easily with the people above him. And in Daniel Levy, is not somebody who panders to coaches who want to fight. Stylistically, he's not a Spursy manager either. But I think he honestly can just brush that to one side, because he sees himself in his lovely suit standing there under the biggest lights and the biggest screen and the strangest wall of fans, and he can feel that he has a chance to make his new mistakes, if you like, and he's turned that into a positive. It's a triumph.
Well, he's spoken about the great potential at Tottenham. And interestingly, he's also mentioned that in the time off since his departure from Manchester United, he's sort of used the 11 months to think and to prepare, he says. He says, you never lose your DNA. You are what you are, for the good things and the bad things. Do you think there's plenty there that he has learnt, that we'll now see maybe a new Jose Gregor?
I mean, I'm so conflicted about this. I thought it was utter madness when I first heard this news.
What, the appointment or the sacking?
The appointment, both, yeah. Which I'm sure we'll come on to. But I think, I don't know, I'm coming around a little bit more now. But all of everything, you know, I think there's the building blocks for a team that Jose Mourinho could mould into one of his kind of ruthlessly efficient, counter-attacking, successful teams. I think there's the basis for that already at Tottenham. But everything rests upon whether he is, as we say, sort of learn from mistakes, willing to change even just a little bit. And, you know, at the first sign of things not going his way, not turn into this surly, like moody, misery guts. And whether he still has the same sort of ability to inspire confidence and commitment that he did from his players in the past. Because I don't know if that was ever really true at Manchester United. There were signs of it, but when you start throwing them under the bus, it's never going to work these days, certainly not with a modern player. So everything rests on whether Jose Mourinho, his personality, his character, whether he can just, I don't know, you know, just even find a little glimmer of that.
But it's interesting.
That young Jose with a sparkle in his eye that we all used to love, because he seems like a completely different person in the last 4 or 5 years.
But do you not think, if you step back again, isn't it an interesting experiment? Because Pochettino was so avuncular with the young players, not with the more established ones, but with the younger players, he was so protective. They could do anything, and he'd back them. And in that sense, Mourinho is the complete opposite. His treatment of Luke Shaw, I think, was tantamount to public bullying. He was very nasty to that to that young player. So you've got someone who's prepared to pick on young players and blame them for things that they can only be 1%, you know, guilty of, really, when it comes down to result, just one mistake perhaps in a match, and really poor behaviour, and so different to the way Pochettino would treat younger players, that it's like we've created this experiment. What will happen to those young players when they've got a manager who is tough on them and not?
But I don't know if he
not
will.
Not avuncular. Well, even if he's not publicly, he's still him, isn't he? He's not somebody who takes the long view and thinks, if I put my arm around the shoulders of this young player who seems a bit fragile at this moment, maybe in 6 months' time, he'll be good for me. He doesn't think like that. He wants to know his the way he's run his teams in the past is he's gone into them and he's asked, "Are you with me? Are we in this together?" He wants complete loyalty from day one. He wants to know you're on board. He doesn't want people who are, "Ooh, I'm not sure. Where are you going to play me, boss? I'm not sure." You know, he doesn't want anything like that. He wants people to think, "I'm I'm privileged to be working with you, Jose. Thank you very much, and I'll do exactly what you say. That he's not, he doesn't have that patience that I think Pochettino had. But it might mean that players who've been coasting and not fulfilling their potential, maybe they'll. So this is exactly what they needed.
And who are you referring to?
Who could I possibly be referring to? Well, I'm thinking mainly, predominantly of Dele Alli, who I think is on the cusp of fading into nothingness, or maybe once again fulfilling his potential and becoming a great player.
I think that's harsh. I think I've said this before. I think he's had injury troubles. The team has been on the slide for 12 months, and he's become a bit of a scapegoat in that regard. So I think, look, there are lots of players. He's got lots of issues, and I'm sure we'll talk about this. For me, primarily, he's got to get the players Vertonghen and Alderweireld, the two centre halves, who are out of contract. And you know, this is where the change is fascinating. It was their age that was essentially counting against them. And you know, under Pochettino, he wants to get, when they get to a certain age, move them on, hopefully for some decent money, and then sign someone younger and develop them. That's the absolute opposite to Jose Mourinho. Their age is now a kind of virtue. Their experience. You'll see two really experienced centre halves who were probably the best defensive pair in the division until 2 years ago, 18 months ago even. I'm sure one of his first tasks will be to get them playing for him. And again, Christian Eriksen, you know, I think he'll do all he can. He'll throw all the love he has in his direction to try and get him to commit and stay. And Dele Alli, I mean, again, I think he'll throw his love towards him. I think that'll be a starting point. And if I don't think you can put Dele Alli in the same category as someone like Luke Shaw. Dele Alli has got the kind of attributes he likes. He's got a nasty streak. He just needs to draw that back out of him.
Well, Tom Roddy echoes what you're saying in the game daily. He says, from an extract from it, Eriksen is out of contract at the end of the season, as are Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld. All three have something to prove and the abilities Mourinho needs to achieve. Retaining their services and getting them performing again will be high on his to-do list. And what of Dele Alli, he asks? Well, this feels like a pivotal moment for his Tottenham career. You've also, Gregor, written about Harry Winks, if I'm right. You've analysed how Spurs could line up under Jose, and it doesn't look good for the England midfielder. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I don't want to go too far with that. I just think that he's one player who you've struggled more than many to find a place for in a regular sort of starting berth in Jose Mourinho's team. I think someone like Eric Dier, who I think he tried to sign at Manchester United, will be very much buoyed by the arrival of Mourinho, because he's always had someone who's like a sort of immovable object in front of the back four. And someone like Ndombele, who is a kind of box-to-box athlete, engine man, and has a, you know, he's a good player as well. And so there's always kind of two, an athlete and someone defensively minded in front of the back four. I'm not sure quite where Winks fits into that. Sometimes he plays one, you know, and it's until a couple of days ago, Harry Winks has been spoken about as that's possibly a, you know, that midfield pivot is a role he's going to play for England in the Euros in the summer. I can't see him playing there for Jose Mourinho. Not when you look at the profile of some of the players he signs, they're like, you know, Vidic and Claude Makélélé, people like that, you know. He doesn't fit into that bracket at all. So Harry Winks is someone, I think, the other person, but Eriksen and Alli too are fascinating, how he fits them into the team, or one of them into the team, because there's always a kind of image of Mourinho's team has been really efficient and kind of ruthless, which they are, but there have been a lot of those kind of number 10 type players who flourished under him. Deco at Porto, Mesut Ozil at Real Madrid, I mean, you could even throw Hazard into that bracket, Wesley Sneijder into Milan. So these players were hugely important for him, and although they were a pragmatic side, a creative player, and so I think how he utilises either of those two players or potentially both is going to be fascinating to see.
Well, he says he's been smiling for days since the appointment at Tottenham. Alison, he's notorious for spending and spending big wherever he's been. Does this suggest that he will be given a pot of money in January?
No, I don't think it does. It would be almost a bigger shock than the appointment of Mourinho in the first place if Daniel Levy gave him a big pot of money in January. Daniel Levy knows you don't get good value in January. He also knows that everyone will be thinking, well, you know, rubbing their hands and thinking, ah, well, with Mourinho at a new club, we can offload players we think fit Gregor's model. And, you know, it's not Levy will not want to spend on anything that is not extremely good business beyond the Mourinho years. So I don't think he will. And there has to have been a conversation about the fact that, yeah, maybe they'll give him money next summer, but not in January, not unless there's an emergency and an injury crisis. No, that is not the Spurs way at all. It would be, as I say, more shocking than Jose being there in the first place.
So what would be success for Tottenham this season, Gregor?
Top four. Has to be, really. I don't think it's out of reach now either. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Tottenham had a bounce now. And like I say, it's a clean slate for players who have been a huge kind of root of Tottenham's issues. The players out of contract, Danny Rose, who's got 18 months to roll and says he's going to see it out. You know, I remember Jose Mourinho was, that question was put to him, how do you deal with these guys, when he was in the Sky Sports studio as a pundit in his off time, and he said that these guys, he doesn't want anyone who doesn't want to be there. But you know, the offers haven't been pouring in for any of these guys. Eriksen was banking on a move to Real Madrid, and it's not, you know, it's not coming. I'm sure if he's a free agent in the summer, but who knows if he can persuade any of these guys to commit. And also, as I'm saying, his perspective is very different to Pochettino's on these guys. I think the top four, you know, it's certainly not out of reach.
If he turns the disaffected into keen to play, they will make the top four.
Yeah.
And that's probably all it took, was for Levy to think, okay, it's worth the short-term negative publicity.
Absolutely.
And the fans bursting into tears. They'll get over it when they see that good players are playing really well.
Well, what they are getting a serial winner, of course. He's won a trophy at every club that he's been at. Will this be his biggest managerial challenge?
I don't know. I mean, it depends what way you look at it. I think Manchester United was really a bigger challenge. It's a bigger club with far greater expectation. And I think Tottenham have a better team. I think they have better players, even though Mourinho was allowed to spend, what, £300, £400 million? It was spent pretty badly, and that was an issue that was, you know, preceded his arrival. And I'd argue it's still the case that Manchester United aren't doing particularly well in the transfer market. So you can't lay out that completely at his door. And he knows the situation at Tottenham. He's not going to have a war chest. He's looked at the squad. And as I say, I think if he can get a few of these guys on side, he has the makings of, you know, he's got the most complete number nine in Europe as his target man. He loves a number nine, you know, a guy who furrows a lone path up front. And then dynamic wingers, Son, Lucas Moura, Giovanni Lo Celso, Eric Lamela.
Oh, yeah, but it's easy to forget about him.
But these guys are all dynamic, and, you know, they work hard. They're willing to do the other side of the game, which he demands from everyone. You know, that's always been one of Mourinho's sort of central tenets. Everyone, even the most creative players, have got to do the other side of the game for the team. I think he's got the basis for that kind of team, and that's probably part of the reason why he took the job.
So there is a new manager at the helm at Tottenham, and of course it means there is no more Maurizio Pochettino at Spurs. The outcry to him being dismissed has been marked by some of the Tottenham players. Dele Alli, for example. I can't thank this man enough. He's taught me so much, and I'm so grateful for everything he's done for me. Good luck, and hope to see you again, my friend. And Harry Kane also said this. Gaffer, I'll be forever thankful to you for helping me achieve my dreams. We've had some amazing moments in the last 5.5 years that I will never forget. You were my manager, but my friend as well, and I thank you for that relationship. Good luck with your next chapter. Whenever results go badly, it is always the manager that falls on the sword. But do we feel that the Tottenham players let him down, Alison?
No, I don't really. That would imply that they wanted him out, or they got tired, consciously tired of his methods. I just think the whole experiment had come to an end. The project had come to an end, and I don't blame the players. Actually, I think Pochettino created far too an emotional vibe for the Champions League final. That was really poor management. He got so overexcited when they got through against Ajax, started talking about changing his career and being magical. And don't talk that way. You've got a big match to come. It felt like they'd peaked, and that's exactly how it panned out. And then he suddenly became very panicked and played Harry Kane when he wasn't fit in the final. And I just think from that point, you know, if money wasn't involved, I'm sure he might have walked away. You know, if football was a hobby, not a lucrative career, he'd have thought, OK, now it's time to go. And it was clear to lots of people, including myself, that right from the start of the new season, whatever the players were doing, he wasn't happy. Even when they beat Crystal Palace 4-0, his demeanour was one of somebody he knew he couldn't get more from them, that it reached an end point. So he should, I think, rather than being in floods of tears on his behalf, I think he's got a good payoff when, in fact, he would have probably realised it was time to go anyway. So, I don't think the players wanted him out. Mm. I believe those messages you've read out, Natalie. I think he was terribly avuncular and supportive and allowed them to grow and be the best they could be. But now, because of the various paths taken, and there is a split in the camp between the more established players and the younger ones, and he's not been able to pull them together, I think actually, I'm not saying it was right to sack him, but it was right that he left.
It did seem, Gregor, in recent months that his mood had changed. I know Alisson's touched on his demeanour, but he was quite sulky at times, and I can only imagine that adds to a negative atmosphere when your manager is behaving like that.
Yeah, look, there's lots of reasons we've spoken about for a long time, this season in particular. There is an element of a kind of what might have been, you know, the sort of overhaul that he wanted to do to the squad. It wasn't that far out of reach, I don't think, if Daniel Levy had decided to back him and sort of accept that the season was not going to be as successful as the previous seasons they've had. But as it is, he's seen someone he believes is a serial winner and hopes to get them back in the Champions League spot and all the money that comes with that, and decided to make the change. I think I agree with Alisson. I think the players, it's a subconscious thing, and the dynamic change with some of the, as I've already touched upon, some of the older players, their future very uncertain, and they didn't feel quite as invested in the project as they had done in the past. But that dynamic has completely changed now. Well, you know, they're playing for the future, playing for potential sort of extension to their connection with the club. But it's going to be a huge change for them. You know, 5 years is a long, long time. I don't think I ever played for a manager for that long. The closest I could try and compare to it was when I was at Nottingham Forest. Paul Hart, who had been my youth team manager and academy director, got the first team job. There was a lot of us were given our debuts and given our sort of chance in the first team when he became the first team manager. So we'd quite a lengthy connection with him. I remember coming home after a defeat to Coventry and just seeing on Sky Sports News, that was how we found out, the ticker, the yeah. yellow ticker, Paul Hart sacked. And that was like, wow, this was, you know, a huge shock. But don't need to get used to it, because there will be more of this, and you know, it's not likely Jose Mourinho is going to be, he never hangs around long, and it's a unique industry, it's so ruthless, that the very next day, you know, there was footage on Tottenham Hotspur's Twitter account of them sort of embracing Mourinho on the training ground, and that's the next morning, you know. Or even that morning, it was announced in the morning. Yeah. You know, so that's it. It's gone.
Painful viewing for Poch, that would have been.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Sir Alex Ferguson used to talk about the four-year cycle at Manchester United, the crucial time when a team needs refreshing, you need fresh voices to be heard in the dressing room, fresh ideas. That didn't really seem to happen at Tottenham. So could a lack of investment have played a part in the eventual departure of Pochettino because he wasn't backed?
Well, he never. I think he quite. I think I got a kick out of the fact that he he brought through young players and built great talents out of moderate ones. It was almost sort of sacrificial the way he said, oh, you know, the stadium's coming first. I accept that my job is to build a team and not to buy a team. It took him a long time, for example, Lucas Moura, it took a long time for him to integrate into the team. I don't think Poch was ever somebody who wanted to spend big and immediately integrate that player in. He's definitely, and the players that he bought subsequent to Moura, they took a while to, and you could still argue they haven't really. We haven't seen the best of them. He likes to stick with what he knows and see it grow. So I think it'd be disingenuous if Pochettino was to go around saying they could have done it had he been backed. I think he was in constant conversation with Levy up until it breaking down at the start of this season. He was in constant conversation about how they could work together, putting the money into the stadium and not spending big on players. And that's him, Pochettino accepting he had enough at his disposal to make sure they made the Champions League each time. And it almost worked, didn't it?
I think it was the exit of players that was more important.
Mm.
I agree, absolutely right. You know, Ndombele is someone who's certainly not seen the best of yet, and we probably would have seen less of as the season wore on than we will now. But it's been about moving people on who he thinks are disrupting, or not. Disrupting is even too strong a word. Just sort of adversely affecting the dynamic of the changing room and not giving him what they once did. That was kind of the crucial issue and the crux of the kind of matter. Daniel Levy didn't really get that done, and I think that's possibly the sort of key element in his downfall, really, at Spurs.
Well, one of the first things that Jose Mourinho began in his press conference was effectively a tribute to Maurizio Pochettino. This is what he said: "This club will always be his home. He can come when he wants. When he misses the people he works with, the door is always open for him. From my experience, tomorrow is another day and he will find happiness again." Obviously, we have no idea how long Pochettino will be out of work for, but you can't imagine it will be very long. He must be a man in demand, wouldn't you think, Alison?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the trick is here that he's been sacked, and yet I think every club that would like to appoint him will think he's engineered that so he can come to us.
It's all working out.
Yeah, I do think that. He's been so closely associated with his project at Spurs, he's always been quite open about where he might go next. The only job he said he wouldn't take is Barcelona. He has said that his dream job is Real Madrid. He said he'd like to manage the Argentine national team. He'd like to go back to Espanyol one day. But they both sound like end of tenure jobs. He's very ambitious. I think we forget how ruthlessly ambitious he is. I mean, Southampton were left gobsmacked when he just up and went. He was right in the middle of something there. Said it tore him apart, but he still went. He will turn up at a big club. If he was asked to ask my advice, I would suggest he does take a short break, given that he suggested it himself that he might want a sabbatical or a change. I think he should. He's quite an emotional character. I think he should take a short break.
And by short, what you mean? Give it to the end of the season, start again?
Ideally, I don't think that would happen. I think ideally, yeah, he should wait till the summer. I think he should cut a deal with Bayern Munich, learn German, have a long holiday in Spain and Argentina, and wow the world.
Sounds delightful, that, doesn't it? I wouldn't mind that.
There could be some turbulence in the dugouts of the elite clubs in Europe, though, I think, in the next 6 to 9 months. So, as we said, look, the work he's done has been ridiculous, really, at Spurs, with the wage bill. And he 100 million net spend, 150 million wage bill, which is like 100 million less than the rest of the top six, and more in the case of Man United. Bayern Munich, yeah. Real Madrid, yeah.
But doesn't Bayern Munich model suit him better than Real Madrid model, where they spend big and want, you know, marquee signings, and that's not what he's good at, is it? We don't know if he's good at that.
Absolutely, yeah. But I'm sure he'd like to try and find out, because, you know, he's, as you said, he flirted his eyelashes a bit at them.
Oh yes, he's flirted. But if I was Real Madrid, I would think twice about whether they fit, other than the love, whether they fit.
You might be right, but I think ultimately he's going to be in demand. It's even been interesting to see supporters of their rivals up the road, like just even on social media.
Or, Arsenal.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Okay.
I honestly think they would jump at the chance to have him there now.
There must be a few managers right now who are sweating over it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Who are in positions.
I'm sure Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is slightly uneasy as well. Yeah, look, I mean, as I said, his work has been remarkable, so he will be in demand. And the way it's come to a natural conclusion, I think, for both parties.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, Manchester City have been handed a boost ahead of Saturday's clash with Chelsea, with goalkeeper Edison returning to training. Pep Guardiola's champions have so far failed to replicate their imperious form of last term and sit fourth in the Premier League, 9 points adrift of the leaders Liverpool. City's title chances were dealt a major blow as they lost 3-1 at Anfield before the international break, and Jurgen Klopp's men are undoubtedly the team to beat 12 matches into the season. But looking ahead then to this weekend, Alison, do we expect City to bounce back from that defeat to Liverpool?
Not necessarily. I think this is a really, really tough fixture for them. You're right, the return of Edison is crucial. And I think generally we tend to underestimate his importance to the team. We tend to concentrate on how good his distribution is, but his shot stopping is also quite superb. And it was evident at Anfield that, you know, just maybe they might have got a draw or something if he'd been there. He's that important to them. So that will give them a boost, the sense that, yes, they can't afford to make it look like they're in some sort of rut or have given up on the title race. But the tough thing is they still have problems at the back, and Bernardo Silva is suspended. And Chelsea, I think, are in good form, but they're also unpredictable. And I think they're more than capable, given the way that Frank Lampard sets them up and his mindset, is that they will go there and attack more than I think probably any other side in the Premier League would go. They will be open, they will be fast, they will be confident. They'll almost treat it like a free hit. There's that element with so many youngsters in the team that he's still got that, Frank Lampard still has that element of there's an excuse there for them if it backfires. And I feel that from the beginning of the season, when it all went a bit pear-shaped against Man United, they've learned so quickly from that. I think we'll probably see them twice as aggressive, and I think it ought to be a quite thrilling game and not the normal game you see when team goes to the Etihad.
Having said all that, though, should we beware a wounded City, Gregor?
To some extent, but I actually agree with Alison. I think what makes this fixture fascinating is how fearless Chelsea sort of are, and the way they're taking to basically every single game. You know, Manchester City, they won't be used to teams. You know, even when Brighton played them recently, and the fact that they sort of had the intention of kind of trying to attack Manchester City, I think it can show their weakness. It illuminates their weaknesses, and the weakness, as we've known for some time, is centre defence. And with Tammy Abraham playing up front there, it's going to be a massive handful for them. And Chelsea pile players forward, and they can play direct when they need to as well. So, you know, there's been a lot of chances. Chelsea have created a lot of chances from that searching pass, often from Jorginho, for Tammy Abraham, and taking a stretch to play. And Manchester City at times have looked very vulnerable to that. They did it against Wolves as well. you know, there's a couple of, I think Wolves, both of Wolves' goals came from those kind of breaks. So yeah, it's got the makings of a fascinating fixture, but Guardiola's, you know, I think when Manchester City lose, they usually respond. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if Manchester City still got the win.
So you expect them to respond. They are, as we mentioned, 9 points off Liverpool as things stand. So, Alison, they really can't afford to drop any more points.
Well, who knows how it'll pan out. The thing is, if they were to drop points, people are already saying it's over. Those people will start polishing their imitation silverware at that point, I think.
Are you not one of them?
I don't polish my silverware too early. No, I don't. Actually, I never polish anything. I've got lots of faded silver in my house, thinking about it. I've got things where I look at them and I think, what is that made of? Oh, it's silver. I'd know that if I polished it.
Oh,
yeah. Life's too short. But, it's not so much the mathematics of it. It's not so much the points difference. It's the fact that you could then conclude, oh, they didn't bounce back. What the implications of how, if Chelsea won, how we know how they would win. So already people aren't as fearful of them. It would just set it up so that for the rest of the campaign, there'd be a lot more teams thinking, oh, we can, you know, Brighton's attitude, as you say, we can have Chelsea's attitude, we can just go for this against City for as long as they do look slightly porous at the back. So I think it's not so much that they would be unable to catch up mathematically. I just think it would make it look like the title challenge had somehow ended.
Mm. After that defeat at Anfield, of course, we saw Pep Guardiola, his reaction to the referee about some of the decisions that were made. And there's been a lot of question marks now about Pep Guardiola's future. A lot of people suggest maybe won't be at City come next season. What do you make of Pep's demeanour that we're noticing of late? Has it changed? Do you think he's a frustrated manager?
Frustrated might be stretching. I think he just realises that he's got a bigger task on his hands than he's had before, really. You know, he's coming up against an opponent that is so formidable and so kind of relentless and shows very little kind of chinks in its armour in Liverpool. And he, you know, also recognises the weaknesses in the sort of the areas that Manchester City are suffering in, particularly central defence. So I just think that's all coming out. That's all visible. It's visible in his reaction to the referee. It's visible in his sort of post-match utterances, you know, highlighting Liverpool and how their results have gone after his own games. But we know one thing: we know he's a fighter, and I don't think this is going to be, Liverpool aren't going to run away with it. I think Manchester City will respond. I mean, this is going to be a difficult game, but they've still, you know, they created a lot of chances against Liverpool, even though they lost the game. They create chance after chance in almost every single game they play, and Chelsea aren't particularly clever at the back all the time either. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Manchester City respond here, and I wouldn't read too much into Pep Guardiola's sort of demeanour. I just think he's hurting.
Gareth Bale has been criticised in Spain for prioritising playing for Wales and finding time for a quick 18 holes on the golf course over turning out for his club Real Madrid. And the forward certainly enjoyed himself after helping his country to the finals of Euro 2020. Bale set up Aaron Ramsey's opener against Hungary and excelled throughout as Wales reached their third major tournament. Now, the 30-year-old hasn't played for Real since the 5th of October, and his return to international duty was dubbed by the Spanish media as the miracle in Wales this week. Wales fans have turned the mantra of Wales Golf Madrid into a chant, with Bale himself admitting he found the song amusing. And after securing qualification, Bale was front and centre as the squad paraded a banner echoing that sentiment. Now, when asked about the banner and his return to fitness just in time to play for Wales, this is what Bale actually had to say on it. He says, maybe it doesn't look great, but it's just a kind of coincidence that the national team comes around this week and I've returned to full training. If I'm fit, no matter where I am, I'm going to try to play, whether it be for Wales or Madrid. For me, it was a no-brainer. If I'm fit to play, then I will give it my all. Now, Gareth Bale, has he disrespected Real Madrid and the fans, first of all, being, if you like, paraded with this banner that, as I mentioned already, was Wales, golf, Madrid, in that order. Alison.
Yes, he has, but I don't blame him one bit. And I think the wider context is worth bringing in, and I do hope that Ryan Giggs sees the irony, because we spent most of his career wondering why he put his country rock bottom as priorities, and now we've got a player who is as good, if not better, than Ryan Giggs was in his pomp, who seems to be putting Wales before a big club. And isn't that quite refreshing? When, you know, when an international break comes along, we all think, oh, we all miss the league. But actually, here's somebody who's injecting a bit of controversy, passion, interest, in apart from just the football and qualifying for the Euros, into playing for the national team. And I think it's almost brave of him to just decide to stand by it and not claim that it's, oh, he didn't realise what was on the flag or whatever. He's gone with it. They're a club that have, in many parts of the club, have treated him quite badly, from ownership down to manager, down to media, down to fans. He's had a lot of stick from all those elements. And I think a caricature has been built up of him, that he's this strange Welsh golf playing weirdo. And it's good that he's quite clever, because he's not, if you've got a lawyer on this, he's not done anything wrong. All he's saying is, I'm fit and I'm going to play. Nothing wrong with that.
I understand where you're coming from. And obviously we know that he has been disrespected himself at Real Madrid. The fans have been getting on his case for a long time and sort of seemingly forgetting his contributions that he's made to winning numerous titles at the club. But Gregor, we can't forget that Real Madrid is the club that has made him rich.
Yeah, but
does he not owe them anything? Any sort of respect?
He owes them performances at the best of his ability when he's fit, and I don't think there's any question mark about that ever. He's not. It's not been a success. He doesn't want to be there. Like, look, let's not beat around the bush. He doesn't want to be there. They don't want him there. But until they come to a resolution, he's got to do the best he can. And I don't, you know, I think it was hilarious, actually. I think they're Real Madrid are such a unique club. They're kind of pious beyond belief, and you know, Marca and the Spanish press are like, it's like propaganda for this huge institution. And you know, I don't think everyone really buys this either, that, you know, every single piece that's written about him, they've managed to find a way of like slipping in something about golf and, you know, call him the golfer and stuff. I think a lot of people in Spain, a lot of the wider public, are thinking, you know, they're going a bit far with this now. I know they want him out of the club, but you know, he's not like a fraud. He's not someone who's kind of not trying. I think I don't think anyone really believes that. I think possibly this is just it's all kind of part of the propaganda machine to try and sort of get Bale out of the club. And
I wonder how you'd feel if you were really loved your team, really loved Real Madrid, and you saw how he played for Wales. Because he makes a whole nation tick, doesn't he? And his crossing's lovely, and his selflessness is incredible. If I was really in love with Real Madrid, and I watched him playing and then celebrating afterwards, I think I might fall back in love with him.
You might fall back in love?
As opposed to think, oh, I hate him because of the flag.
Well, what would you not expect him to play that way for?
No, because if you're being brainwashed that he's not giving what he should be giving to Real Madrid, he's not respecting the club, he's not fitting in properly, and yet you suddenly see, I think that's it's quite a beautiful picture, somebody being a superstar, being so joyous with a small nation and allowing them. It's very Ronaldo-esque, isn't it? The way Portugal just seemed to win stuff and qualify for stuff because of him, and the fact that he can turn it on for his country in a slightly different way often than he does for his clubs. And you've got Bale doing the same. It might make me think, ironically, as you were saying, the media have gone too far.
Well, yeah, and he's also said that he feels like he's kind of playing in a park as a kid with some guys he's grown up with almost, when he returns to play for Wales. So it's a very different dynamic. But
again, in itself, isn't that... He said it's more enjoyable to play for Wales. Isn't that, a slight, though?
No wonder when you're getting jeered from the
crowd. But don't you have a responsibility as a player, as somebody that represents a club who's then going on to represent their nation, that you still should think about what you say, how you behave away from that club, despite the fact you're not there? You might not be getting on very well with the hierarchy and everyone, and you know, you may well have the fans on your back. Do you not still have a responsibility?
I mean, you can definitely see that point of view, but again, I just think it's looking at things a bit too seriously. I think that everyone knows he doesn't want to be at the club. That's no real secret, and everyone knows that Real Madrid and Zidane in particular doesn't want him to be there either. It's just not happened, and he's not done anything to really disrespect the club. He's not thrown in the towel as a player, and you know, I don't buy for a second that he's feigned injury or sort of delayed his return in order to wait to be fit for Wales or anything like that. I don't believe that's in Gareth Bale, really. I just think that Real Madrid have handled his sort of their attempt for him to leave very badly, and it's probably backfired on them.
Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guest today, Alison Rudd.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.